Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The conflict in Ukraine is not only about which side will eventually prevail. The stakes are much higher. The outcome of this conflict will determine the nature of a new geopolitical order. The West is fighting Russia to maintain its global hegemony. Much of the world would like to see this come to an end. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Glenn Deason. He is a professor at the University of Southeastern Norway, as well as author of the book Russophobia, Propaganda in International Politics. And we have Maxim Suchkov. He is the director of the Center for Advanced American Studies at Moscow State Institute of International Relations. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start with Glenn here. Glenn, I've just jotted down a number of countries here. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, India, South Africa. Now I'll throw in OPEC Plus. Not too long ago, these were considered, you know, if not staunch American allies, very supportive of the West. And these are significant countries, and OPEC by itself is very important. They're not in line with Washington's demands that the world condemn Russia. How significant is that? Go ahead, Glenn.
It's very significant, and this is a clear indication that the world order that was established after the Cold War, that of liberal hegemony focused around the United States, has come to an end. We see that the rest of the world, they're not supporting the anti-Russian sanctions. It's pretty much a NATO plus a handful of countries who have joined the sanctions. And this is quite significant because I think it's approximately 85% of the world now lives in country who haven't sanctioned Russia. On the contrary, you see the opposite happening. You see SCO expanding, which is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. You see the BRICS now expanding, taking on more competencies. So, this doesn't mean that they necessarily support Russia. The vast majority do not. They also do not support the Western sanctions. So the point isn't here that we're replacing the American order with a Russian-centric order. Of course not. That would be ridiculous. But the order that's coming to an end is this Western-centric order, where effectively the United States was able to dictate and the rest of the world followed. And again, many countries are seeing this with a view to great opportunities. You mentioned a few countries, but also Latin America. You hear from Brazil and Argentina. Many countries are now saying that, you know, it doesn't mean that support Russia, but now their vulnerability to U.S. pressure is diminishing because there will always be now other centers of power which they can lean towards if the U.S. pressures them too hard. So the world is definitely changing, and there's no denying this.
You know, Max, also, there's another angle to this, following on what Glenn had to say here. All of the countries I mentioned and what Glenn mentioned is that there's this new thirst and desire for sovereignty, because this is what people, you know, the United States, you know, with its NATO allies go around threatening everyone, you know, from anywhere, destroying your currency, destroying your financial system, like what they did with Turkey, a NATO member. These countries that are coalescing around these groups, that it's not confrontational. What they're saying, I really love the word that Glenn used, competence. You know, we're competent for our own foreign policy. We're competent enough to know what our national interests. I hate how the West always, it's us or them, as it's confrontational. What I think that these new centers are saying, you know, we don't want to be confrontational with you, but we don't want to get involved in decision making that adversely affects us. Go ahead, Max.
Look, in the 1990s, Thomas Friedman, the columnist for the New York Times, written that we didn't know what to call the new world order by what it was, so we called it, by what it wasn't. So they said, you know, the post-bipolar world. Perhaps we don't know exactly what the world order that is now emerging is going to look like or what it is today, but we could perhaps argue that what we're seeing now is the beginning of the post-unipolar world as we knew it since the breakup of the Soviet Union and the bipolar system. I think the processes are, you know, happening on a simultaneously multi-level, in multi-level domains. We still have the core of nuclear states. But we still have, and it's, you know, in that sense, it's, you know, the polycentric world, so to say. We perhaps have the economic duopoly in the form of US and China on the kind of geoeconomic level. But we also, as you and you and Glenn argued, are seeing the emergence of a great number of states who are seeking greater autonomy. And while most of them are still very much hooked to the Western financial institutions and are very much dependent on the international institutions where the West has a dominance, we do see the new strive for sovereignty and for sovereign decision making, especially in critical forms. And many of them, even though if they vote against Russia on the UN General Assembly, both at the level of elites and both at the level of people, see that this fight that is happening now on the battlefield of Ukraine or in other domains as kind of the beginning of the new post-colonialism, so to say.
That's such a really good point, because there is that angle to it as well. You know, Glenn, if you listen to Western leaders and pundits, media, this is a struggle of good versus evil, democracy versus autocracy. They love to play this kind of thing, about democracy and all this. But there are two core things that go across everything that we've really said. Is that it's, I call it dollar privilege, the dominance of the dollar. And we've seen that even though the United States considers Europe its ally, it's done a pretty good job of damaging the euro, okay, and making the entire euro sphere very dependent on the U.S. That's a strike in the right direction for the U.S. And there's also energy, which again is kind of counterintuitive, because you have all these Western elites that are these green maniacs, but they do want to be able to control energy. And I'd also throw in other commodities. So it cuts this way as well, because there's a huge difference between money and energy, I would say. You can print money, but you can't print energy. And this is why I would even go as far as to say one of the reasons why the Nord Stream 2 pipelines were damaged. Glenn.
Well, energy is obviously the lifeblood in any economy. And this has been one of the problems that we've had in the West during this unipolar order. The problem is during global hegemony, so you can afford to make a lot of mistakes because you can absorb the punishment. But over time, the problems will start to accumulate. And again, if you see now this idea that we could just sanction all of Russian energy and we would be fine, I mean, we're cutting off the lifeblood. But they say, well, we can diversify. But can we? Because again, this is not our first mistake, spoiling relations with the Russians. We also, you know, put sanctions on the Venezuelans against the Iranians. Now we're alienating the Saudis as well. I mean, well, you if you push too hard against everyone, especially the energy producers, you know, it's not versus right or wrong or good versus evil. It's just you know, it's physics, it's reality. The economies will grind to a halt. And but on your first point, I agree as well. I don't think there's, of course, this conflict is, it has many dimensions. It's very complex, but this attempt to reduce it down to being a conflict between democracy versus authoritarianism. First of all, it is ridiculous. This is very poor heuristics to understand this conflict. This is effectively the replacement of saying that it's a competition between good and evil. We always done this with the Russians, to be honest. We said this was Europeans against Asiatic peoples. This was, you know, civilization versus the barbarians. You know, we always had this, you know, you simplify everything down to a narrative of good versus evil. It's good for mobilizing support among the population, but it doesn't equip you with the right tools to actually resolve this conflict, which is devastating for everyone.
Well, you're absolutely right, particularly if you're, the shelves in the shop are emptying out and you're getting cold in the winter. The good versus evil thing wanes in importance here. Max, one of the things that's very interesting is because of the way the West has framed the conflict in Ukraine, as I see that this is for Ukrainian democracy or whatever. But when you go outside of the NATO world bubble, it's pretty amazing. Russia, the West has declared war on Russia and in a variety of ways. And the rest of the world is almost in awe, is being able to stand up to the entire thrust of all of Western institutions. And it's the West that is going into recession, and Russia is coming out of it. I've talked to many people in the global South that are just amazed. The all-powerful West doesn't seem all that powerful anymore. Max.
Well, that, but also there is one, I think, token of the crumbling system is in the very fact that Secretary Blinken had to say, and I'm not quoting directly, something of the kind that the world cannot live without U.S. Leadership. I think that the very fact that he's talking about it is symptomatic in the sense that, that the world has lived without the U.S. leadership for most of its history, but it's not to degrade the great many things that the United States has done for the world. And I think it's one of the, things that Russia should totally avoid doing, as did the Soviet Union. And the Iron Curtain that is falling now is falling on the opposite end. It's not Russia that is shutting down itself from the rest of the world, and Russia should not be canceling.
I actually have the Blinken quote remarkably right here. If Washington does not set the rules for the world, then someone else will. Well, okay, maybe a collective group of countries will, or different organizations working through consensus. Glenn, you're agreeing. I mean, I don't see the why it should be so dramatic, because the world is in pretty bad shape. Maybe there should be better collective leadership. Go ahead, Glenn.
No, I agree. And it also has to be said, this constant warning from the U.S. if China is the new hegemon. But it has to be pointed out, like, China will not occupy the position the U.S. had in the 90s. There will not be another sole superpower capable of actually dominating the entire planet. This era is over. So the horrors which Blinken is expressing is the fact that the U.S. won't on its own be able to dictate the rules of the game. And again, this is a common phrase from the United States. Keep in mind that Obama, when he was launching this economic trade agreements in East Asia, he also wrote this op-ed in the New York Times where he warned that, listen, the future of economic relations in China, in Asia, the rules should not be written by China, it should be written by us. And it's very zero-sum mentality. Again, it's just like in Europe, it's not, Russia being the center, it's not going to happen. And also in Asia, it's not China going to dominate everything, it's not going to happen as well. But it's this transition from unipolarity to multipolarity in which, the entire process of diplomacy ends. It's not one center dictating to the rest, but diplomacy now instead has to be compromised and negotiations, which have become naughty words in the past few years. But this is something we have to adapt to, because the distribution of power no longer reflects unipolarity, and that's just a reality which states should address and adapt to. Also, the United States, for its own interests.
Yeah, for its own interests. It's all too often forgotten. I remember when Joe Biden became president, he said he would have a middle class foreign policy. Well, it's anything but. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue the discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Max here in Moscow. We were talking about mentalities at the end of the first part of the program here. I'm sure you came across Joseph Burrell's gardening essays about, how Europe is the garden and you have to fight off the jungle invading the garden. And then he had a follow-up blog to try to, he dug himself in very deep using a gardener's motif here. But I mean, this is really a mentality, and Glenn was touching upon it. He said, we have these Western elites, they can't imagine a world being run differently, which is so ignorant of history. Empires rise and fall, nation states come and go. I mean, if anything about history, it's all about flux, but we have these Western elite that have this kind of Fukuyama belief that we're at the end of history and nothing can change and everybody is in their right position, which is ahistorical. Go ahead.
Well, with all the criticism, I think Borrell has a good point by arguing that the European prosperity is very much dependent on the security guarantees from the US and cheap energy from Russia and cheap goods from China. And that's none of that is in place except perhaps for even greater dependence on the United States in terms of its military security infrastructure. Well, I think the very wording that was used by Borrell in particular, but also by a great number of Western pundits and policymakers, reflects the sense, speaking of mentality, to continue to live in the comfort zone that they used to live in the 1990s, where the rest of the world has never had that comfort zone in the first place. But secondly, that the comfort zone is no more, even for the West. Yeah. So to continue to talk, to use the language that was adequate perhaps in 1990s, now that they, exactly as Glenn pointed out, that the distribution of power no longer reflects unipolarity, is absolutely ridiculous. One other thing, I think what we're seeing now is the systems of checks and balances across the globe is changing dramatically, the one that emerged after World War II, but it's also changing inside the United States. We will see this, you know, the party fights seek to change this, the system that has actually made the United States what it is, what it was recently, but it's also kind of projecting to the need to change the system of checks and balances and accumulate even more power that, you know, automatically produces counter offensives and pushbacks from Russia, from China, and from other states. That is just natural, that I think is not very well appreciated across the Western elites, whereas people do get it, I would say.
I absolutely agree with you here. I mean, again, part of the post-war settlement, Glenn, as it were, Bretton Woods and whatnot. I mean, the United States and the West in general have been able to financialize their economies, and you know, and it worked for a long time, and the West became very, very rich and the envy of the world. But that's slowly coming to an end. You can just print so much money. You can't print prosperity. You can use a wise monetary policy from time to time, fiscal policy, but it's coming to an end. They're come to the end of their rope here, because as I've kind of alluded to already in the program, is that stability will come through real things, oil, grain, okay, natural gas. This is one of the reasons why people want to, when they see that the economic system that the West has created has become unstable, and you're going to start seeing a level of immiseration in the West, people want to go with what it has real value. And it's really remarkable for viewers looking at currencies. No one would have thought, including myself, that before February 24th, that very soon the Russian ruble would become a hard currency, because we all treated it as a soft currency before. People actually want rubles now, because it's not, these rubles are backed up by real things, commodities.
Yeah, well, that's correct. And well, of course, you could have a system, an economy, international economy run by countries without natural resources. However, this was, you know, ever since the repeal of the Corn Laws in Britain, the idea was that one, they would do the high tech aspect of the economy and the financial, and the rest would mainly export, farm products or natural resources. However, this is not the international distribution of labor we're currently having, because you see that outside the West, this is where almost all the natural resources are. But we also now see that they have their own financial instruments. They have their own banks. They have their own payment systems. Also, especially with China leading, they also dominate the high tech area. You know, they're developing their own transportation corridors. They have, one after another, you see that the West doesn't necessarily have this real strategic industry, which creates huge dependencies from the rest of the world. So instead, you see that the main strategic industries and dependencies are now created. Well, I reside in other countries like Russia, where they now have all these natural resources. And again, people would have laughed you out of the room only a year ago by suggesting that, you know, because Russia wasn't a real economy. It was a gas station masquerading as an economy. This was kind of the line we were thrown. But again, we in the West, we threw everything at the Russian economy. I mean, we took stole $300 billion of its from its central bank. We cut off from the SWIFT payment system, put huge sanctions on this entire economy. We stopped importing energy, even though it's destroying Europe, doing all these things. And now suddenly, you know, we see that as the Economist recently noted, Russia is now recovering. It will go back to growth while the Europeans are sinking. So obviously, this is not what we expected. So we then have to reassess some of the assumption which we had. And that's
stop right there, Glenn.
That's where I went too far.
No, they won't do that. That's the nature of the beast here. Max, yeah. You know, I'm making light of it, but it's very true. This is what really scares me, because there isn't a reassessment of, you know, how did we get into this mess? Because they won't accept that they worked under false assumptions. As I've been saying for months now, bad narratives create bad outcomes, and they can't reassess that, because it goes back down to this moral purity issue that is really blocking their a sane view of geopolitics. End of speech. Go ahead, Max.
Well, you know, as in any major confrontation, the first level of the confrontation is kind of ideological one, and when opponents see that their narrative isn't going through, the confrontation falls down to the kind of second level of which is money. And I think we've come through both of these stages now, where, you know, the West is continuing to push these ideological narrative. And when it sees that it doesn't fly in the kind of quote-unquote global South, it switches gears to economic coercion and sanctions and all kinds of things. And when that doesn't help, you know, it goes to the third level of confrontation, which is pretty much violence, terror, and then military coercion. And of course, we're a certain bifurcation point where either, you know, the policymakers in the West will take decision to continue to push for more kind of military pressure on Russia and others that are in the, if not supportive of Russia, then at least continue their neutrality that is not favorable to Western interests in this situation. Or, you know, the big interests that are behind Western politics, you know, whether it's energy, IT industry, others, push the elites to be more, I wouldn't say more agreeable, but push the elites to seek more some concessions and compromises.
And yes, I think you have a word in Russian, agreement incapable.
Exactly. Agreement incapable. For now, most of the Western elites are agreement incapable, but we see them fall one by one recently, you know, in the UK, in Italy, and other places.
Trust. Okay. I want to kind of put a bow on top of this here. Joseph Borrell is easy to read and kind of make fun of, okay, because I think he has a very antiquated view of history and of what how Europe has gotten where it's gotten to. But I see this conflict, at the center of this conflict in Ukraine is the waning of 500 years of European Western global control. It's coming to an end, and it's coming to end very rapidly, much faster than we would have ever thought. Maybe it's because our heightened levels of technology. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, the reason why it's difficult to imagine is because we never had this before. I mean, we talked about world orders. The dominant world order we ever had was that of the sovereign nation state, which was established with the Peace of Westphalia in 1648. This was the main one. But again, even this was limited to Europeans. It was sovereignty for civilized peoples, not, you know, the barbarians outside of Europe. This was kind of the logic. And this was then replaced after World War II. You had a bipolar system in which you had very diminished sovereignty for all except the two poles of power. And then you had after the Cold War, we had unipolar order. Now, we tend to think of this as multilateralism, because it was the Western countries having this collective hegemony. But now this distribution of power is gone. Also, the legitimacy behind the system is completely gone, because we can't have a world order without the legitimacy as well. Because the rest of the world sees, for example, you know, human rights. It was supposed to limit what states could do in the international system, limit the use of force. Instead, we see it's being used to enable use of force. So to excuse, you know, they're attacking their own people, let's bomb them, let's do regime change, let's invade. So it kind of, the legitimacy have disappeared. Now, what we're going back to now is, you know, we're not going back to bipolar system, even before World War II, because that was a multipolarity, but only with European powers and the United States. What we're going back to now is like truly global multipolarity with, you know, China and, you know, soon India, like all of these non-Western countries taking their top seats. This is something we never had before. So I can understand why, you know, though I don't condone it, fellows like, you know, Borrell going back to, you know, the colonial rhetoric of the rule of the jungle and, you know, Europe is a jungle. Unless we go in and civilize the jungle, that's how we are a garden. If you don't civilize the jungle, it will invade us. This is, you know, very unfortunate rhetoric, but it does reflect that we can't really imagine this new world order, which is now coming. I mean, it's not in the future. It's already here, and it's happening very, very fast, which is why it's difficult to adjust.
Well, I would follow up on that. I would say that I used the word global hegemony in my introduction. A global hegemon, when it sees its power receding, it will lash out. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now. And I think that's what this collective war, Western war against Russia, is all about. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank all my guests here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.